Making Love. This is Barry Long speaking. Man and woman have forgotten how to make physical love. This is the greatest tragedy of all time, for it is the cause of most of the unhappiness on earth. The forgetfulness has been going on and slowly getting worse for so many thousands of years that it is now a race problem. This means that only the individual man or woman has any chance of starting to correct it. There can be no mass solutions. The problem is too personal and too deep. Everyone has to do it for himself or herself, or it can't be done. Woman's basic unhappiness, her perennial discontent, is because man can no longer reach her physically. Her emotional excess, depressions, tearful frustration, even premenstrual tension, and ultimately the conditions leading to hysterectomy and other uterine problems, are due to man's sexual failure to gather or release in lovemaking her finest fundamental female energies. These extraordinarily beautiful or divine energies are hyper-intensive, and when left untapped in woman as they are now, degenerate into psychic or emotional disturbances, and eventually it is they that crystallize into physical abnormalities. The womb gives birth to all things. Man's basic unhappiness, his perennial restlessness, is because, in forgetting how to make right love to woman, he has lost his original divine authority, and with it sexual control of himself. His emotional or psychic degeneracy manifests racially as sex obsession. All men, without exception, are sex obsessed. Sex obsession in man causes compulsive sexual fantasizing, chronic masturbation, even though he may live with a mate, sex repression leading to anger and violence, and the universal symptom of losing himself in work and wealth chasing to compensate for his ineptitude as a true lover. Busyness and wealth gathering are cover-ups in both sexes for the inability or fear to love beautifully through the body. Through his neglect of love as woman, man suffers from premature ejaculation, guilt, anxiety, self-doubt, impotence, sexual atrophy masquerading as sexual disinterest, sexual abstinence due to repressed fear of failure, sexual bravado and lack of true wisdom, all of which he again inflicts on woman, thus aggravating her basic discontent and his own restlessness. Every virgin who mates with man today is immediately contaminated. His lack of love germinates in her the racial seed of discontent. She will be disillusioned. To be a fully integrated male human being requires man to assimilate through his body the divine female energies that woman can only release to him through right physical lovemaking. But the man has to be man enough, that is, has to be able to love her enough, love her divinely or selflessly enough during the act, to extract these energies from her deepest center. This does not depend on technique. It requires love, pure love. To be able to love in this way is the authority man has lost, and his only true authority over woman. Woman, however, will not and cannot give up her divine energies to any man who is not yet himself, that is, not fully integrated or aligned, no matter how much she loves him and wants to give. As very few men on the earth today are themselves, that is, possess the authority to express and absorb sufficient love through their bodies to reach the highest part of woman, the gap of unhappiness between man and woman keeps on growing. The man who has developed sexual expertise still does not know how to make this divine love. Heightened sensations and orgasms are gratifying and give him a form of authority, but they are not the love that woman craves. The women or woman he makes love to, he satisfies like a good meal. But soon she hungers again and eventually despises her appetite or herself because she knows she is not being loved. In a relationship together, the penalty man has to pay for his physical failure to serve woman as the personification of love is her tyrannous emotionality. Wherever he loves or tries to love, she will one day shock him, stun him, devastate him by suddenly revealing in herself the fiendess, the living female demon of emotion. Any man who has not yet experienced the hate of the fiendess in woman has not yet experienced love. She shows herself when he is attached and can't just walk away. Any woman who has not yet seen herself being the fiendess has not yet connected with her love. The fiendess of emotion in woman is hell on earth to man. This is the part of her he cannot handle or understand, because it is the demon of his own failure to love come to life, to scorn, abuse, and torment him. He is terrified of it. He bluffs and blusters his way through, but finally, as he grows older, the fiendess will inevitably conquer him and force him to surrender the last vestige of his manhood and authority for the sake of some peace. They will then grow old together, feeling safe but half dead as they lean on each other in the awful world of compromise. While the world continues as is, the fiendess will never allow man to forget his fundamental failure to love woman rightly. Woman must be loved. The future of the human race depends on woman being loved. Because only when woman is truly loved can man truly be himself and regain his lost authority. Only then can peace return to earth. Yet woman as she is now cannot be loved for long or for good by man as he is now. Together they are trapped in a vicious circle, and if left any longer to their own ideas of love, there is no way out for them. Love is in a dreadful mess on this planet. Something urgently has to be done. A start must be made now, today. And you must make it. In these two tapes, I am going to tell you how to make physical love again. But first I'm going to tell you all about love and give you an understanding of the purpose of love and your place in love or life on earth. Love without purpose, as you can perceive in the world around you, is hopeless. Understanding love as it is, and not as you think you know it or like to imagine it, is the first lesson in making love. I am going to be straightforward and open. I shall be describing the physical act of lovemaking in detail, using words like vagina and penis and other terms that lovers use. I am going to be speaking very intimately to you. I suggest you play both tapes over and over. Each time, you will have new insights into love. You cannot learn what is in these tapes and make divine love. You must absorb it so that it becomes part of you, part of your understanding. However, test each statement in your own experience. Or if a statement seems to be outside your experience, listen for the ring of truth in it, the echo of the knowledge you once had. The part of you that is deepest and truest knows all. As far as I am concerned, there is no reason why a child should not hear the tapes. In fact, I would like every boy and girl in their teens to hear them over and over again as they grow up, especially the young women. The only problem is that when a child or teenager asks intelligent questions after hearing the tape, will there be an intelligent adult around to answer honestly and truly from a position of love and understanding outside the vicious circle? I trust so. The main physical problem in lovemaking is man's premature ejaculation, and the woman, as I will explain later, unsuspectingly contributes to this. Premature ejaculation is due to emotion caused by excitement and anticipation in both parties. This emotion, particularly in the man, is there long before any love play or the physical act starts. In man, there is a continuous pre-sexual excitation or raised aggression level of emotion due to his normal sexual fantasizing or sex obsession. By joking and talking about sex with other men, by reading about it, by slyly alluding to it in mixed company, by thinking about sex, by looking at women in public and making conscious and habitually unconscious lusting connections, he keeps his basic aggression level, or sexual emotion, relatively high. If you imagine man as a sexual thermometer, he is normally registering about 25 degrees of sexual emotion because of his sex obsession, while woman normally is only at about 5 degrees. Woman is basically less aggressive than man because she is not basically sex-obsessed. Consequently, man is ready for sex at any time, apart from his numerous hang-ups or inhibitions, whereas woman is not. For her to want to make love, her basic sexual temperature needs to be raised. In the love play before mating, the flirting, holding, kissing and fondling of the breasts and genitals raises the sexual temperature or emotion of both parties. This, added to the man's normal raised level of stimulation due to sex obsession, makes him fantasize far more intensively than she. So again, his sexual temperature rises at a much faster rate. By the time he's about to enter her, he's at a burning 99 degrees and rising rapidly with expectation and impatience. She's at a comfortable and enjoyable 70 degrees and rising too. Sometimes she only has to open her legs to him, the final fantastic image realized, and he ejaculates or comes. Or his penis touches her, or merely penetrates the lips of the vagina, and he comes. Or he just manages to get inside the vagina, and in seconds, his sexual temperature drops from a feverish 100 plus to nil, as he selfishly ejaculates himself back into a rare state of cool, selfless desirelessness. Woman, thank God, is love. Love is her true nature underneath all the emotion, notions, and hang-ups. If she loves him, or if she just loves, she can bear the sexual disappointment. Woman at every level represents the mother, the true archetypal female, Mother Earth, in which all of us delight and find our pleasure, even if it is only in a bottle of whiskey made out of the earth's grain and water. Man as he is now is like a child to the boundless love in her, the true woman which every woman underneath her neuroses knows herself to be. In her love, she can forgive him for coming, nullifying her own desire mechanism, take his restless worldliness expressed in his orgasm, and hold him there inside of her, boyish and new, in his brief moment of peace. For woman, the fulfillment of her love is to take him into her, everything he can give, while in return offering up every bit of herself in sweet, complete surrender to love. But the man, when he comes prematurely, was not love enough to give her all of himself. He didn't have the time. So she, in turn, was unable to give him all the love she had to give. By coming, he went. He left her. Because of it, he is little less a man. She is a little less her true self. And against the scale of man and woman's racial struggle to be united, they are a little further apart. Woman, when she loves, can dissolve in herself most of the frustration caused by man's premature ejaculation. Even so, any residual emotion from it becomes a part of the fiendess, which will crucify him tomorrow. But her love cannot compensate at all for the unfulfilled need to be relieved of her finer energies, to express or unload to man in the love act her intrinsic female beauty, the divine fragrance which builds up continuously in every woman and which is behind man's need of her. The pain of having to carry this unnecessary burden due to man's default is the deep grievance underlying the punishing moods and emotional fury of the fiendess. A man who comes prematurely has temporarily lost the will to love, has lost himself, therefore cannot take the complete surrender of woman, and so is without real authority. He knows it and is shamed by it. The only valid authority man can have over woman is through love, and that authority she will concede to him unconditionally when he demonstrates sufficient love to accept and take her total surrender. Only what he can take can she give. His trumped-up economic and physical authority over her in the world during the last few thousand years has been a nasty bit of work of getting even with her for his own weakness, the abdication of his true authority. As selfless and munificent as a truly loving woman can be, the tragic division between her and her lover goes on from generation to generation because man has forgotten himself, forgotten how to love, and woman cannot give herself, cannot reach her natural fulfillment without him. The reason woman does not fantasize about sex nearly as much as man is that sex is not as much a gratification for her. To woman, sex is more love, and love, unlike sex, cannot be fantasized about. To love is to hold the still image of the beloved in the consciousness. Once fantasy starts as erotic picturing, sexuality and the sex shop take over from love. To man, sex also can be love, but because he invariably uses it to ejaculate as a means of releasing his pent-up psychic aggression, his sexual emotion, it contains a good deal of gratification and selfishness. He uses the woman. If he could mate with her without coming, he would start to love her rightly, or for herself. Ejaculation, as far as man is concerned, usually marks the end of the act. But for woman, even if he has brought her to orgasm, he has still not collected her finer energies above the orgasm. her orgasm will release or disperse her immediate sexual emotion. But the higher divine energies that remain uncollected will finally degenerate into emotional demand and discontent. All emotion in woman is the demand or cry to be truly loved and not to be used as a sexual spittoon. At the beginning of time, when the world had just begun, the state of man and woman was very different from what it is today. When I say this, you must not confuse the beginning of time and the world with the beginning of the universe or the earth. Let me explain. The earth is not the world. Man built the world. Time and the world began relatively recently, about 12,000 years ago, when man identified for the first time with physical death. Before that time, there was only past extending back to the first life forms on Earth. Time is not past. Time provides the sense of tomorrow or continuity on which the world is built. Before life on Earth, there was not only no time, but no past either, only the present, the presence, or the timeless. Time is not a process of things getting better. That's progress. Time is a process of things getting gradually worse. Things have got a lot worse for man and woman, or their love, since they started to slip imperceptibly into time or self-forgetfulness around 10,000 BC. This, you might say, sounds like myth. It is myth, but not myth as fable or fiction. What I am going to describe now is the truth. Myth, true myth, is the only means we have left of communicating the truth, the original state of man and woman on earth. So please be still and receptive as you can. Suspend your critical mind and listen while I outline for you the myth or truth of man and woman, your own original state, which you are striving to get back to by loving and living in time today. Originally, around 12,000 years ago, the individual bodies of man and woman were permanently surrounded by a magnificent golden orb or halo. This, radiating from the solar plexus, extended visibly to well above the head, into the ground and out beyond the reach of the outstretched arms. The woman's orb was a slightly deeper gold than the man's, but both had the same dazzling, sublime, and beauteous quality. Woman was pure love, the serene, passive pole of human spiritual love on earth. Man, the active, positive pole, also was love, but not pure love in the same sense. His was the love of pure authority, the masculine principle, which was the guardian of love or woman on earth. He or his love was responsible for maintaining the golden divine quality of love between them. The brilliance of their orbs or halos at any time reflected the intensity and purity of that love. Their physical lovemaking was ecstatic. The divine energy generated was so powerful that after making love, their bodies or halos blaze with incredible splendor. This self-luminous radiance of spirit or love, created in each by physical union, was the manifestation of their godhood on earth. Man and woman at the beginning of time were gods. And they sustained the awareness and presence of their godhood, their timelessness, by making divine physical love. The halo or golden energy was their means of communicating, whether together or apart. Its range went far beyond the visible outline, and through it each was in constant, undisturbed touch with the other, in silence and stillness. That is, in mutual consciousness of pure love. In time, when either halo needed re-energizing, the man and woman would draw together, make love as the only two conscious physical poles of love on earth, and illuminate or regenerate themselves again. He would regenerate her love, while she regenerated his love and authority. Communication between them was so complete that there was no need for speech. Speaking developed with time. It developed in men and women who, by losing themselves in time given to other things, to building the world, started to forget to love, that is, to forget how to be themselves all the time. The result was they failed to make divine physical love. Their halos or consciousness lost the golden connection, and they had to start talking across the developing gap between them. Then, through speech, arose misunderstandings and emotion. As time or lovelessness further invaded the bodies of man and woman, speech replaced the immediacy and fullness of love, and the vocabulary grew and grew. Instead of being love, they said, "I love you," and many other wordy substitutes for love. Some individuals retained the intensity of the halo longer than others. But with time or past increasing in everyone, things got inexorably worse. A few thousand years later, most men and women had forgotten how to be love and how to make love. Although apparently performing the same physical act, they were unable to release or generate the divine energy and personify in themselves the living spirit or presence of love, the timeless. Man and woman's bodies were no longer aligned in love, but in time and emotion. Instead of making pure love, they made emotional, demanding love. And instead of producing spiritually enlightened children, they produced emotionally dependent ones. Woman, who was once pure love, was now confused and perennially discontented. Man, having lost his authority, was now impatient with her. And in trying to find a substitute for his authority, he became perennially busy and restless. Furthermore, lacking the authority to control her, he used his superior physical and economic strength to force her into an inferior social position, particularly by exploiting her love of her young. This so enraged her that it engendered the fiendess, who, as long as time continued, would never forget or forgive his injustice and corruption of love. The human race, the race into time, had begun. A few men and women, by deliberately refraining from making physical love, managed to retain a partial ability to love divinely within themselves. These were the mystics, saints, and ascetics of all nations. They turned their attention inward and loved the divine energies in their own bodies. By refusing to mate with other bodies, now filling with time and emotion in the form of discontent and restlessness, the mystics kept themselves relatively pure. Nonetheless, measured against the fullness and richness of the original radiance, theirs was a pale and lopsided sort of purity. by denying the earthly need of union with the opposite pole or sex, the mystical alternative, for all its lofty devotion and idealism, was fundamentally exclusive, unnatural, and selfish. Consequently, it produced half-integrated and only partly divine human beings. Things were getting unmistakably worse. The result was reflected in the orbs and halos of these men and women mystics. Their halos had gradually shrunk in size and illumination to a small circle of light around the head. You will see this today depicted in old paintings and icons, particularly of Christian saints. These shrunken miniature halos show just how restricted and formalized man's idea of love on earth, or earthly love, had become in time. By excluding the whole of his or her body from the divine union with the opposite sex on earth, and grounding love solely in the abstraction of the mind, the halo was reduced to encircle the head alone, or at best, the upper part of the body. It could be argued that the mystics and saints, due to the inrush of time, had no choice but to follow the way of celibacy. At least that way they managed to keep some of the pure divine love on earth, until sainthood itself all but disappeared under the weight of time. But really, the option they chose, not to make love, or their interpretation of that impulse, was a great tragedy for the human race. The mystics and saints just might have saved the day, or the world, had they acted differently or more selflessly. Despite their divine love, the celibate saints, like the rest of humanity being swamped by time, had actually forgotten how to make physical love, and didn't realize it. And they were very emotional about it. They even made a virtue of their forgetfulness. Perplexed and guilt-ridden by the power of their own relentless passion, most Christian saints fiercely denounced physical lovemaking, and for all the wrong reasons. The truth is, it was they who didn't love enough. They didn't love their fellow man with sufficient golden intensity to dip into the divine mind with their own bodies through intercourse and recall how to make love on earth so as to give guidance or some sort of inspired example. That was just too much of a self-sacrifice. So like the mob that screamed, "Crucify him," they too condemned the love they feared and did not understand.